bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. From WHUS Stores, I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Bicycle Talk to be broadcast November 29th, 2023. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, but I may not be able to get right back to you. But you can leave your comments down here below if you'd like, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can, and you're listening right here on Facebook Live, you can make your little comment down here below, or again, you can send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Oh boy, here we go. Trek bicycles and the Trek Ranger lawsuit. So anyway, Trek apparently has a habit of going after its namesake with lawsuits. As a matter of fact, just so you know, Trek ranks number 4 on the list of trademark bullies maintained by Trademarkia.com, just behind Kellogg's, Apple, and Monster Energy. Can you believe that? Amazing, isn't it? So anyway, yeah, Trek's got a little bad boy thing going on there. Giving you a little rant there, Trek, for, you know, just leave it alone, man. I mean, people go for treks. It happens. People spin on their bicycles. It happens. These things are like, you know, common words. And I guess there are some people that are actually trademarking them. And so therefore, and they have a team of lawyers that can maybe make a big stink about it. So that's what's happened. But we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the show, because I've got some more to talk about there. On a positive side, tomorrow... And as you will see, my lovely co-host Fran is not here today. She is working again. She's trying to work because tomorrow she's taking the day off, because you know what tomorrow is? Tomorrow's Franny's birthday. So if you happen to know her online or otherwise, and you might want to just drop her a line and wish her a happy birthday tomorrow. So it's a big one. That's all I can say. Decades, baby. Decades. It's all about the decades. Those are when the big ones come in, those decades. So anyway, drop Franny a message and tell her you heard about it on Bicycle Talk. That'll be fun. Hey, event organizers, USA Cycling has launched a new event organizer resource portal. So you can go to it right through USA Cycling. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the show, so you can get a little bit of an idea about what it's like to put on an event. They ask some very interesting and direct questions as to what you know, what you're doing with your event and how you would like to organize your event, and it's very helpful. So we'll just talk about that a little bit in a little bit. Good morning, Chris. Good morning, John. Yeah, happy Monday. It is a happy Monday. It is. Mondays are good, right? Mondays are good. We had a nice weekend. We had a cold weekend. Woo-hoo. Boy, it's been, it never hit 40 yesterday out here. Woo, that's cold. That's really cold. 40 degrees Fahrenheit for you listeners from across the pond, etc. So, just so you know. Anyway. We'll talk a little bit about that. And last week, this is also on the positive side. Last week, I called foul on the blocking of Eurosport cycling events by major networks and streaming services. Why? Because these guys right here, GCN, they're stopping their service. And you know, they were one of my outlets. I would join them every year, and I would watch various bike races that were broadcast on GCN. And most of their feed was Eurosport, which I like Eurosport. I like Eurosport a lot. It's European bicycle racing, European football, or otherwise known in this country as the stupid word we call it, soccer. But anyway, it's football because they use your feet. That's, you know, makes sense. Anyway, so there might be a solution. Been doing a little research. I'm going to play around with it. I have a 30-day trial period to play around with it on, and I will let you know exactly how it all works. But anyone ever hear of VPN? More in the show. We'll talk about it. Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. Insure your bike on a homeowner policy? You might want to check into that. So I was talking to somebody about this a little while ago, and they said, you know, I've got, you know, these expensive bikes, and I'm really concerned, you know, what happens if I have an accident with the bike, or what happens when, you know, if somebody decides to steal my bike, or whatever it is. And so I said, well, I think your homeowner's policy covers that, but you might want to double check into that. And so, of course, he did double check into that. And as he double checked into that, there were all sorts of interesting little, well, what is your bike made of? What's your bike made of? For real? Yeah. Well, it's made out of steel. Okay. All right. It's not carbon fiber, is it? Guess what? That's a buzz. So carbon fiber bikes, they're going to charge you a little bit more to insure the bike. And on and on and on and on. So be really, really careful and make sure you really do have valid insurance through your homeowner's policy. Some people have told me that they had homeowner's insurance on their bike and it was a one-hit policy. And once they hit it once, that was it, no more. And if they wanted to continue to keep the bikes on their policy, they needed to buy separate policies or riders for their current insurance policies. So something you might want to check into. Or the other thing you can do, and I can explain to you on this too, is you can go to a private company which just offers, you know, bike insurance, bicycle insurance. So places, there's a number of them out there. Google it and you will have too many to even think about, and you'll be getting all sorts of phone calls and emails from all these people that are that you sent your information into. So be a little careful about that too, of course, as with anything that you inquire about online these days. So for example, here, the Forbes magazine article, Do You Need Bike Insurance for Your Bicycle, addressed bicycle damage. You crash your bike, if you crash into an object like a tree or a car, typically won't be covered under home, condo, or renter insurance policy for the bike damage. There's Bike Insure, there's Velo Insure, there's all different ones out there. Then this company, Bike Insure, which is one of them out there, will not compromise a cyclist homeowner insurance if you have a bicycle accident claim. So that's another thing you need to look into. You need to look into the idea of, okay, so I got this insurance and now I'm going to make a claim, and what if my homeowner's policy finds out about it because I also checked with them, and is it going to compromise that in any way? So you need to ask a lot of questions, because, you know, accidents happen. They really do. And it's not always, you know, you never know. You just never know. And it could just be that, you know, so let's say you crash your bike and then you get hurt, and you get hurt in, you know, a way that maybe your health insurance doesn't cover you completely. You might have a little extra insurance with the bike insurance. These are all lots of questions to ask. Insurance is such a tricky little scam business. Oh, I said it, didn't I? Oh, I'm in the insurance capital of the world here too. You know, this is Connecticut. And so we are kind of known for our insurance companies here. But then again, you know, how much do you need? Do you really need it? What is the question here? It's generally fear factor stuff, I do believe. Anyway, a little sip of the coffee to keep me going. And you talk about this comes from a an article out of Bicycle Retail and Industry News, and this person had a Trek Madone, and it was destroyed in a crash, and he tried to replace it through its homeowner's insurance, and that would have exposed his policy to cancellation. Yeah, they cancel your policy if you use your insurance. Now, what is wrong with that? Is there anyone out there that finds this somewhat slightly illegal? Definitely immoral. I got that part. But, you know, why do you buy insurance if they're just going to cancel you if you use it? That's kind of a gray area there, isn't it? Anyway, so, you know, this particular person knew what he had to do, and it led him to eventually creating a company called Bike Insure nearly 3 years ago, writing policies specifically designed to cover bikes and e-bikes. With the price of components, not to mention bikes, on the rise, this person's name was Buzzy Cohen, by the way. Cohen notes his company also can ease the pain of replacing damaged parts. So if you sideswipe that $250 Shimano XTR derailleur against a rock or snap that $450 SRAM ETAP AXS shifter on the pavement, it's not necessarily an oh shift moment. Very nice. That's clever. Cohen is developing partnerships with retailers, and in March, he announced his offering would be digitally integrated with Smart Etailing, and now rebranded as Workstand, with more than 1,100 locally owned retailers on the platform. I couldn't imagine how an accident could cost much more and possibly prevent me from continuing the simple joy of riding my bike. Unfortunately, the homeowner's insurance route had a large deductible. Yeah, there you go. So that becomes another part of the component there, too. How much is the deductible? Are they going to make you pay $1,000 deductible to insure your $2,000 bike? That doesn't seem fair. Anyway, living in California, raising the premium 32% higher than, say, Wisconsin. An e-bike would raise it 30%. Identifying as a commuter raised the premium 10% higher than casual or competitive bike usage, which raised, and then competitive bike usage raised it at 60%. So this is not right. So anyway, traditional insurance pricing model is very similar to auto insurance. Shockingly, the final quote for his bicycle insurance premium was almost as expensive as his insurance premium that he was paying for his car. So anyway, there are other ways of going. This gentleman's offering something with a $100 deductible and, you know, just a monthly nationwide premium, and including accidents on the bike, including in competition and for transporting by land or air. How about that? When was the last time you tried to get a claim back from the airline when they goofed up your bike when you're flying it somewhere? There's another good one. It also covers accessories like attached computers and cameras. Theft coverage is also available for additional monthly charge, and it includes a $10,000 annual claim limit. So, you know, there's ways around it. So there are other companies like this out here. I'm just reading this one right off of Bicycle Retail and Industry News. So this is one that has come to my attention, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit today on Ron's Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. That's a tip for you. There you go. All right. So what else do we have here today? So we talked about these guys, Trek. Yeah, I started out with Trek and ranting on Trek for ranking high in trademark oppositions. Yeah. So, the appeals court upholds Ranger Trek trademark over Trek Bicycles opposition. This is the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit has upheld the registration of Ranger Trek trademark, which Trek had opposed. Christina Isaacs, a Washington state woman, had first applied to register Ranger Trek in 2016 for use on products that would primarily be sold in national park stores. Trek Bicycle said consumers could confuse Ranger Trek with its trademarks pointing out that Trek has marketed backpacks and other bags and even lunch boxes in the past. It argued that its bicycles are closely associated with parks. Little gray there, guys. Little gray. Trek first appealed to the trademark trial and appeal board, which upheld the Ranger Trek registration. Trek asked the board to reconsider, which the TTAB declined to do. So in February of 2022, Trek appealed to the Federal Circuit Court. Trek disputed Isaac's registration of the mark for use on backpacks, hiking bags, sports bags, travel bags, hats, jackets, shirts. It did not appeal its use on other products, including expedition journals. You know, are you using the same logo? No. Are you? What is the point? So, the court on Wednesday upheld TTAB's ruling, saying Trek's opposition failed to meet the tests of the DuPont factors, which includes the examination of the similarity of the trademarks, the similarity of the goods and their trade channels, and other factors. The court's decision examined each of the 13 DuPont factors and Trek's other arguments and said it found them unpersuasive. A Trek bicycle spokesman said the company would have no comment on the decision. Isaacs could not be reached immediately for comment on Wednesday. So this is the one example of where Trek Bicycle has opposed the registration of its trademarks that it feels threatening its trademark. And I said earlier that they were number four on the list of trademark bullies. And there's a December 2022 Brain article, which has various experts explaining that Trek was obligated to protect its trademark. So anyway, I am going to go on to that. Oh, poor Trek. They're getting really called out here. So this came from 2022, and it started with this whole Ranger Trek thing that was going on. Apparently, the Wisconsin bike brand has opposed more than 400 applications for trademarks that the company felt came too close to its turf, earning itself a number four spot on the list of prolific opposers, just behind Apple and brands like Nike and Red Bull. They opposed applications from a tent brand, which was Trek YR, T-R-E-K-Y-R, a Methodist church publishing arm, Trek Religious Audio Tapes, the Oregon Board of Education, Career Trek Services, the maker of the vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, Duo Trek, Prize Trek, a mobile app, and several bike and e-bike makers, to name a few, while other brands file or threaten trademark infringement suits, the Wisconsin company often takes a quieter approach. It aims to stop the potential infringers before they come to the market by filing oppositions with the trademark trial and appeal board. So anyway, they've had mixed results before, and in many cases, companies have abandoned applications after Trek's opposition. Interesting. So Trek comes in with a pile of lawyers and says, no, no, no. And the other companies go, okay, we'll change our name. We'll not do that. So I guess that's okay. It just seems to me like they are kind of being a bit of a bully here. So that's unfortunate. But anyway, Cooper Tire, you know, a tire company, right? They have a Rugged Trek trademark registration. And it says it can't be used on bike tires. They're just making car tires. So there's that. For the automotive brand Cooper Tire, which after Trek complained, Cooper rewrote the application to specify the trademark wouldn't cover bicycle or tricycle tires. There's a few other ones in here, too, which were kind of funny. The Ranger Trek case, obviously, we just talked about. And then there were a couple of other ones out there, like Subaru Crosstrek. Yeah, really, Subaru. They went after Subaru. Subaru Crosstrek. So Trek has gone to court before, notably in 2012 when it challenged Subaru of America's application to register CrossTrek for a new car model. Perhaps it had been another car company, the application may not have caught Trek's attention, but the application came near the end of a nearly 10-year marketing relationship between Trek, Subaru, and mountain biking. Remember the Subaru Trek team? Interesting. And the Subaru IMBA Trail Care Crew program. Subaru regularly featured mountain bikes in its marketing. Trek saw the car company moving into its space, free riding on Trek's brand equity. To add gas to Trek's fire, a few weeks after filing the application for CrossTrek, Subaru sought to modify the scope of its existing Subaru trademark. The company wanted to register its name for auto brake pads, windshield wiper blades, license plate frames, and similar things. Makes sense, but also bicycles, bicycle wheels, bicycle rims, and bicycle saddles. Trek immediately filed a complaint with the U.S. District Court of the Northern District of Illinois, charging Subaru with infringing upon and diluting its trademark, engaging in unfair competition, and violating the terms of their sponsorship agreement and other complaints. I would think that there was something deeper here. Somehow somebody had a bone to pick here, and something came up. I'm just guessing. I don't know anything about it, but you never, ever know. In filing, Subaru challenged Trek's trademark, bringing a linguistic expert in to testify about its genericness. There's a word. Genericness. Didn't even realize it existed. It questioned the strength and fame of Trek's brand and the likelihood of consumer confusion. But before going to trial, the companies reached a settlement Subaru's lawyers later called favorable for the car company. Subaru retained CrossTrek trademark, and before the settlement was reached, the car company removed the language about bicycles, saddles, rims, and wheels from its application. Yeah, okay, so you want to sue us? Then here, we're going to do this. And I'm sure that's what that was. And we got more lawyers than you have because we're Subaru and you're Trek Bicycle. So who knows? So anyway, yeah, they're kind of known for doing this. They've had other things in the past, including, we think Trek bicycle maker, but the company is active in areas from Trek Travel to Trek University, even has a trademark for Trek Wine and for the Secret Bar, a discreet watering hole at Trek-sponsored cyclocross races. They got their name all over the place. And then there's other things like the Orbitrek stepper machine. Yeah, you know, everybody, if you're going to use Trek in your name, you might want to think twice about it because these guys are real quick to go to court. They're real, real quick. So anyway, that's all for my rant of the week. Oh, my goodness. So anyway, am I saying shame on you, Trek? Well, you know, I understand you have to protect your properties and all. I get that. Not too many people have Meniza branded anything, though, so I don't really worry about it too much. Or even Bicycle Talk. Hopefully they won't. I don't really want to do anything like that. So anyway, that's what we got. And we will move on. Or last but not least, Peddlin' Ron. Yeah, we don't want to know about that. So the bicycle industry is all very, very interesting. And again, I talked earlier in the show about USA Cycling, and they launching an event, new organizer resource portal. I think I actually saw this before I put on the cyclocross race this year, because when I went back to take a look at it, it kind of looked familiar to me. So anyway, that's what it is. It was very familiar. Now, if I can just figure out where I buried it here. There it is. USA Cycling. So you have to go to USA Cycling on this. You can go to usacycling.org/host-an-event. So host an event. That's it. And it'll put you into their page, their portal page that says, host an event. Start planning with help from USA Cycling. Whether this is your first event or you're a seasoned promoter, USA Cycling has the tools, resources, and support you need to make an event a success. They will guide you through out your journey, providing support with marketing, promotion, comprehensive liability insurance, coverage, safety, and more. I've been using USA Cycling for a number of years now for my insurance, and that's I have to go there to get my permit, so or at least if I want it to be covered by USA Cycling, and basically they're kind of like the big game in town, so a lot of people use them, and of course every year their rates have going up and up and up and up. So they're, I think what they're trying to do here is they're trying to save face here a little bit, maybe. I'm not really sure. You know, there's a great picture here, a cyclocross picture on this event page. Gosh, it looks an awful lot like Hartford from a few years ago. Really, really steep run up, nasty steep run up. It sure looks like Hartford. Well, maybe they are using that picture. That's interesting. I wonder if they paid for rights for that. Anyway, simple. So if it's your first time learning, organizing an event, you can learn why you should partner with USA Cycling. They'll explain it all to you there. There's little buttons here that you can go to. Have you worked with us before? Welcome back. Log in to start your permit process. And I have to tell you, it's super easy. If you've done it there before, you click on that link button. It puts you right back. And then you pretty much can kind of follow your way through from what you did the previous year. So it's not super hard to set the whole program up. And then experienced event, again, organizer looking for a new partner. Check out our full suite of resources. That's interesting. I'm going to look into that. That might be kind of neat. So make your event a success. And the mission is, of course, with USA Cycling, is to develop the sport of cycling in the United States at all levels to achieve sustained international success. And what does it mean to sanction an event with USA Cycling? It means that the event follows the rules and competition structure laid out by the national governing body, the international governing body, and the International Olympic Committee. So there's 1,500 plus events across the country that are sanctioned by USA Cycling to provide registrants with high caliber experience. And then you can also get your results, and they can be posted on the USA Cycling site. If you don't post them as an event organizer, maybe your timing service does, or event, you know, someone who's managing that sort, that part of your program can do that too. When you sanction an event with USA Cycling, you gain access to marketing support, cycling specific insurance, assistance planning with your event. So start partner with USA Cycling. And the benefits are marketing and promotion, industry expertise, safety and support, insurance, and the Olympic pathway. So it's kind of cool. So there are this is all on this one page right here. Steps to cycling event success. All right. Set a date, start your plan your budget. These are all click points on here. So you can click on these and it'll help explain to you exactly how that all works. And let's see. So we've got choose and design your course, create an event, look and feel, permitting with USA Cycling. And during the event, there's a lot of important things to factors to look into to execution of your event. USA Cycling is covered, has you covered with educational resources to help you feel ready for your event. And then after the event, recap with your stakeholders, upload the race results to USA Cycling, and there's just a button right there. You push the button, up it goes, and then follow-up resources too, which completes the post-event reporting on your permit by answering some questions about your event and adding to your rider count. And off you go. So you can start your permit today and get it going. So pretty cool stuff. And right there with USA Cycling. So they are trying to make it easier than it has been in the past. I will say that this is a step forward. I like this. This is very, very good, because I will also say that in the past, it has been a little bit tricky to put together an event with USA Cycling, trying to find your information, trying to find, you know, where your previous information might be so you can replicate it. And it is, you know, not always as seamless as, let's say, like Bike Reg, which is pretty seamless. They do a pretty good job. So anyway, yay, let's hear it. Let's hear it for USA Cycling and putting together something that actually is making a fair amount of sense, which is a good thing. Okay, what else do we have here for you guys today? Let's see. That was my Trek issue. Okay, so here we go. We talked about the fact that these guys right here, Global Cycling Network, they've made an announcement that they are no longer going to be covering a streaming service for you as far as European bike racing goes, or all sorts of bike racing goes, whatever they are covering. So I believe that ends in early December, if I'm not mistaken. I did announce it last week, so I don't have my notes from last week in front of me, so I can't really look it up at the moment. But and they did say that if you had paid for a yearly service and your service was still, it was due to expire sometime, let's say like midsummer, that they would refund you back on that. So but if you're just buying it month to month, then that's a different idea. So it's basically going to go away, though. So that brought me to, so what do I do? You know, I mean, is there some way I can get around buying a $70 streaming service? Because if I buy this streaming service, I'm having this problem with UConn basketball right now, by the way. Another somewhat sore subject, because they're using different avenues for their broadcast of their events, and you gotta buy this service to get that game and that service to get that game, and it's like no one package. Well, there is one package, it's called cable, but you know what, I just, cable is another expensive avenue. So it's like, what do I do? Well, I think I just figured it out. So I, of course, saw this listed. It might have been even on my Facebook page. I can't really remember, but somebody said something about how about a VPN? What the heck is VPN? I had no idea. So you can get a VPN address and you can connect to a server in Europe. See, because here's the problem: if you go to Eurosport right now, which is pretty much covering almost all the bicycle racing that happens all over Europe, including your Tour de France, your Giro d'Italia, your Vuelta España, and then all the other stuff, all the classics in the spring, all the cyclocross racing, all that. If you go to Eurosport, they got it all. And quite honestly, just not to belittle the people that are broadcasting here, and you know, we love Phil's always a character, always a lot of fun. I love Bob Roll. I think Bob Roll is hysterical, and I enjoy him too. But I also, when you go to Europe and you pick up a Eurosport feed, and Sean Kelly is the announcer, Sean Kelly's a lot special. He's just you know, he's an ex-bike racer, he's very dry. Just very, very dry, but incredibly informative. And I like him. I like listening to him as a sports commentator, because he really, I mean, you feel like you're sitting in the middle of the peloton when you listen to Sean Kelly talk. It's interesting. I like his perspective. I like his angle. There's nothing splashy or overly entertaining about him like some color commentators that are out there, but He just kind of gets the point across and cuts it like it is. It looks really kind of nice. So anyway, here's the solution. And again, I'm working on this, and I did download a VPN service today because I'm curious. I have 30 days to make my decision as to whether or not I want to keep it, and if I don't want to keep it, I can cancel it. But so this is, fortunately, you can get around restrictions with a reputable VPN. By using VPN, you can connect to a server in Europe. Right? So you're no longer using a US IP address, which automatically codes you to go by the Discovery Channel or whatever it is. I don't know whoever's got what. But the only issue that will not pass VPNs, anyway, you get to a European IP. Internet address, and it unlocks from Europe, and that's one thing it'll say. We do not broadcast to the United States, but if you're doing it through a European IP address, they are broadcasting to you. So this is how you do it. So they've shortlisted here the top three VPNs that will get the job done. And I actually have five of them listed here, just so you know. Because for a sports enthusiast, Eurosport is a treasure trove, whether it's the 2023 UEFA Championships League or the Olympics, it's a place to catch all the action. So even though the service is region locked outside of Europe, you might be missing out on some stirring action if you're in the U.S. or anywhere outside of the region. Luckily, you can skirt around these restrictions with a VPN. VPN will change your IP address and make it seem as if your location is where it isn't geo-blocked. That's what they call it, geo-blocking. And there's a whole bunch of these things out there, and you can cruise through and take a look at them and make your decision as to which one works the best for you financially and, you know, and what you're going to get for your money. And there's NordVPN, Surfshark, IP Vanish, ExpressVPN, and CyberGhost, just to name five off the top. And these, the reason I have these all listed is because I operate on a Macintosh computer. So I've got a Mac computer here, and I just wanted to know which best ones were for Mac in 2023. And so, therefore, and there's different price ranges and different offers. And today is, God, I hate this. It's Cyber Monday, which I think means that everyone's buying things today for the holidays. Got me. I don't know. I already bought some things for Franny. So anyway, I don't need to do that. But I did apparently get an extra deal today because I, you know, did it on Cyber Monday. For whatever that's worth. I don't understand. But I got a couple of years worth of service out of this deal. So it's not a bad deal, really, when you look at it. And it is certainly very affordable as far as that goes. So maybe, just maybe, a VPN is the answer for you because you'll be able to watch Eurosport direct from a European IP address. So it's kind of an interesting idea. As I said, I will be testing it out over the next month, and I will see exactly what it's like. It might be terrible. I have no idea. So it's brand new to me, but I have a 30-day trial period here. And hey, Fran is watching. Hey, Franny, you're supposed to be at work. Yeah. Yeah, she's at work. She must have a break between patients because she is normally sitting right back here on the couch, but she's not here on the couch today. So anyway, hi, Fran. By the way, Franny, I mentioned to everybody that tomorrow is your birthday, so you're going to get a bunch of notices from people. Okay. Anyway, so VPN, that is the answer. So there is a possible answer. And again, I will get back to you on that. Next thing on my list here that I wanted to talk about is the automated bike lane enforcement laws are taking off. And so is camera tech. So I was going to talk about this last week, but then kind of ran out of time because, you know me, I just get talking. And then before you know it, it's the end of the show. And I go, oh, I meant to talk about this. But so we will now. And this was, of course, from Streets Blog. And it is, falls into my advocacy category as far as the show goes. And it was really interesting because there's, you know, everybody's talking about AI now. AI is this. AI is that. AI is going to control your world. AI is going to do this. It's going to do that. It's going to whatever. People are afraid to death of the technology that's out there. And, you know, there's probably some pretty good reasons to be afraid of the technology. But just so you know, AI-equipped technology helps city identify when drivers park in unprotected lanes and possibly hit them with fines. So how are they doing this? Well, you know, there's cameras on the street now. There's a lot more cameras at traffic lights. There's that sort of thing. But the big thing is, and the coolest thing about this is, well, let me get to it here. Automated bike enforcement laws are a growing trend across the nation, and one company thinks it's finally developed the advanced technology to make that emerging legislation a reality. Following recent bicycle enforcement bills, Chicago, California, and New York, machine-learned company Hayden AI, recently launched new technology that company officials believe is the first to use artificial intelligence to capture and track motorists who block cycle paths and hopefully improve safety for people who ride. And they need all the help they can get. A staggering 966 people on bicycles were killed in the United States in 2021 alone, a 2.2% uptick from the previous year, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, marking the highest number of cyclists killed on U.S. roads since 1975. Did I mention the cars have gotten too big? Anyway, I always mention that. There's little data on how many riders died because of blocked bike lanes, but advocates stress that even one such tragedy is too many. Just last year, a motorist killed a 3-year-old Lily Shambrook when her mother was forced to swerve out of a Chicago cycle path where a utility truck had been illegally parked. The family's bike was quickly clipped by a semi-truck in the adjacent driving lane, throwing the toddler out of the rear-mounted seat in which she was riding and under the wheels. Another such fatality, that of Madison Linden in New York in 2018, led eventually to the construction of protected bike lane on Central Park West. So I'm gonna make a quick comment here about rear-mounted bike seats, which I am just adamantly against. I hate them. I think that they're horribly dangerous, and boy, a trailer is just so much safer. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, you know, I want to go out, ride my bike, and I want to bring my child with me, my young baby, newborn, toddler, whatever, I want to bring them with me. Break down and do it. You bought the expensive bike seat for the car, buy the expensive bike trailer. It's worth it. It is so worth it. It's so much safer. You become much more respected when you're pulling that thing down the road because people see a bike trailer and they got a pretty darn good idea what's inside. And it just changes the game, plus the protection and the whole crash chamber. And oh, God. Oh, don't put your kid on the back on a child seat. Please, please don't do that. Even the Europeans know better. They don't use child seats on the back. They have seats that sit on the top tube of the bike and they're up in the front so that if they have a crash or a problem, they can pretty much envelop their child and go down and create their own safety cage around the kid. I don't like rear-mounted cycle carriers at all, if you haven't figured that out yet. So anyway, So Kendra Ramsey, executive director of CalBike, whose organization supported California's bike lane legislation, hopes the automatic enforcement programs will change the way drivers behave. This law helps with that culture change by increasing the likelihood that folks will be ticketed for illegally parking and hopefully improve the safety of people using bike lanes. Hayden AI hopes its technology can accelerate the implementation of bike lanes by harnessing the power of machine learning to cycle paths, identifying vehicles or objects that may be obstructing them, and rapidly share that with the appropriate enforcement authority. So here's where the fun part begins. How in the heck do you do this? How do you know that there was somebody parked there at that time? How do you know that? How do you see this as cameras are mostly stationary, right? Technology can be mounted to vehicles like buses rather than stationary street fixtures like traffic lights and lampposts, but Hayden stresses that its reach is still significant. There's no data yet on how accurate the cameras are, but the company says it's based on the same technology as cameras that spot bus lane blockers, which are 99% accurate. As long as we can see, we can see it, we can map it, says Charles Torito, chief officer at Hayden AI. And as long as we can map it, we can enforce it. He says that agencies can calibrate the technology to better decide when and when not to issue a violation. This might enable cities like New York to make special allowances for certain cargo delivery bikes, trikes, and quad cycles, which transportation officials recently moved to allow into bike lanes, provided they are less than 48 inches wide. Any requirements specific to an agency or ordinance or law can be applied using AI and can be rejected or not captured at all. Some cities may not embrace bus lanes or bus stop enforcement laws now, but Torito says AI can at least help them understand the magnitude of the problem, with like bike lane violations or even city officials that are not ready to start writing tickets. Cities want to see for themselves the scope of the problem, Torito said, and we find that our technology is helpful, a helpful tool when it comes to quantifying how much of an issue parking in a bike lane or parking in a bus lane or parking at a bus stop really is. Interesting, huh? So now we have a mobile surveillance system that is out there in some of the major cities. And if this catches on, it could be in your city too. So it's kind of interesting. It definitely leads to a... I think, you know, there's certain times when you say, you know, how much is this Big Brother watching me? And then, you know what? If you're really concerned about Big Brother watching you because you're blocking a bike lane or because you're parked in a handicap spot or if you don't have a sticker, and maybe you should like think twice about breaking the law. You know, maybe this is kind of made for you, if that's who you are. So, you know, it's definitely something that we need to look at. It's definitely something we need to take care of for the future. And this is a great way to do it. I'm trying to figure out a way to make our roads safer. And, you know, I preach this all the time. How do you make your roads safer? You make them smaller. How do you make your roads slower? You make them smaller. How do you make your roads just in general better for pedestrians and for cyclists? You make the roads smaller, not bigger, not bigger. Bigger creates more speed. Speed creates more accidents. Traffic light enforcement is a backwards solution to movement of traffic. It really doesn't work. I mean, it works. Yes, it does work. Very, very busy intersection. I can certainly understand it. But God, the roundabout concept is so, so, so much safer. I don't know of any vehicle, I don't care who it is, and I'm not offering this as a challenge, by the way, that can go through a roundabout at 70 miles an hour. And yet, right out here, a mile and a half from my house, I see people running traffic lights at 70 miles an hour on a daily basis. And they're running red lights. And if you're not paying attention when you're pulling out, if you are in a motorized vehicle or on a bicycle, they're going to hit you. And the end result is not going to be good. So traffic lights are just the wrong idea. Widening the roads, putting big shoulders in, the wrong idea. It's not the right way to go. We need to make everything a little bit smaller, a little more compact, and really kind of put out the, what do they call them in Europe? They call it, they call it road furniture. Put more road furniture out there. More, you know, center islands. More things that really calm down the traffic. Make the traffic really slow down. Because visually, it doesn't look like something you can go through at a high rate of speed. So it's a good thing. And road furniture, I like road furniture. That's a good idea. Let's do more road furniture. Like that a lot. It's not such a good thing when someone smacks a piece of road furniture in a big bike race, but, you know, they usually are pretty well protected. They almost always have a marshal standing right on that centerpiece with flags and all sorts of things to make sure that the cyclists see that they're supposed to separate and, you know, stay away from this particular hazard or obstacle that's out there. But, you know, they kind of have it covered. They've seen this before. But, yeah, road furniture can be a problem. Furniture is great in your living room. Anyway, let's move on here. What else do I have here on the list today? So that's our automatic lane enforcement, which I wanted to talk about. In bicycle racing, the Ineos Grenadiers have signed 2022 World Time Trial champion Tobias Foss on a 3-year contract from Jumbo Visma. The Norwegian says he has joined the team he loved as a child, having been inspired by the success of Bradley Wiggins and Chris Froome in its former life as Team Sky. Foss has posted a picture of himself as a 15-year-old riding in a replica kit. So that's a new feed that came from, guess where? Eurosport. Yeah, I got the Eurosport page up right now because I'm able to go there, and it's kind of interesting. Although I am getting that little note there, which this is interesting. I just went over to it, and it says the video is unavailable in your country. More information can be found here. So I'm still not quite VPN'd in right yet. Again, we'll talk about that. Tobias said he can't believe this is happening after joining the Ineos Grenadiers on a 3-year contract, having admitted to being the biggest fanboy ever of the team. So that's kind of a cool thing. He's 25 years old. He's posted a picture of himself as a teenager riding in the Team Sky kit. So, you know, we'll see what's happening. Jumbo team is starting to look a little crumbly in a few areas here. There's people kind of heading in this direction and heading in that direction. And I think I remember seeing this with when Team Sky and Ineos had that big changeover, too. This is not uncommon that things like this is, you know, this is a thing. It's totally a thing. So anyway, we'll see what happens with Tobias and see how he makes out. Maybe he can win another world championship in the time trial. That might be interesting, huh? So we'll see. We'll see. He wants to earn a place on Norway's team for the Paris 2024 Olympics, where he's targeting a place on the podium. This is the big word out there in the bicycle racing world at this moment. And let's see here. What else do I have on this? We got lots of cyclocross racing going on here. We've got, oh God, we're coming into the Governor's Guard this weekend. It's the final race of the Connecticut Series, and that is real, real close. So that will be just November 5th. November 5th. Where am I? December 3rd, excuse me. The Governor's Guard Rodeo. So that is coming up. And that is Let me see here if I can actually pull that up and get you some information on that. But I know it's all part of the Connecticut series, which is kind of coming to an end. So this will be the last of the race of the races in the Connecticut series, and I'm not pulling it up anywhere. Probably spelling something wrong. Who knows? But anyway, that is coming up this weekend, and we will be finalizing everything. I believe that is where the series winners are announced also, or might be announced at that point. So we'll see. John Mosier says also 18-year-old AJ August just signed to the Ineos Grenadiers. Rochester, New York son who cut his teeth racing in New England cycling. Very interesting. Thanks, John. Thanks for sharing that with us. I appreciate that. Yeah, so I think what's going on here is Ineos is trying to rebuild the team here a little bit. You know, they've kind of got some age outs in there, and, you know, I hate to say that because I'm an age out guy. I'm an old guy. But anyway, it does happen. It really does happen. So we'll see. We'll see. You know, 2024 season is yet another season. There's a lot of good racing coming up. But right now, there's still a lot of good racing, including December 5th through the 10th, the national championships here in the United States. So the USA Cycling National Cyclocross Championships are right after the Governor's Guard Rodeo Race, which is the last of the Connecticut Series. I know there's a couple of people that are not going to be participating in that this year because of the fact that Nationals is just a few days afterwards, and they'll be doing travel time at that point. Because being down in Louisville, there it is accessible by automobile. You can bring your bikes and, you know, travel down there fairly easily. Probably not much more than a 14 or 15 hour drive. I'm not really sure from Connecticut, but anyway, I do know that there are people that are going to the Nationals, and I did post one. YouTube video of someone riding around the supposed course. I'd imagine I didn't get a chance to look at that this morning, so I hope that maybe somebody has a little bit better idea what the course is. It looked pretty flat in a lot of the areas, and also, but it had a couple of long climbs that came up from what was possibly a river. I know it's a different course than they used in the previous years, so it's going to be a little bit different. So, finishing points, the Connecticut Cyclocross Series is coming to an end, you know, how do you feel about Trek and their brand name infringement and lawsuit situation? That's kind of a fun thing, isn't it? And how do you feel about, you know, having cameras mounted on buses which help protect cyclists? I like that idea. I like that idea a lot. So I always love the listener comments. It's great that you guys are listening. I will be back again next week, and we'll be talking a little bit more because the Nationals are coming and they'll be starting next week. So there'll be some preliminary racing through the week I might be able to talk about. We'll see. Getting there. Not really. No, it's going to be the following week after that. But that's okay. I'm going to say it again, and it won't be my last time. I want you to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and join the revolution of change. Hey, take a day, park that car or truck, ride your bicycle instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk without my co-host, Fran Storch, although she has been poking in here. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have been listening to this on Facebook Live, you can always leave comments below or comments on the Facebook page, or you can drop me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information, just drop me an email. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. You just it really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.